Howdy.
Hey, how are you?
Not bad. It's been a busy morning between the hate mail already starting to roll in, and I'm launching my own podcast today.
Oh boy. What's the name of the podcast?
Two Girls, One Mic, a podcast that discusses the holes and plot holes in pornography.
The bottle of capsules and the box of tablets are packed into one box. And once again, we know
every Monday through Thursday, we bring you a new story on the theme of power, culture, or the future. Handpicked from theoutline.com. I'm your host, James T. Green, and this is The Dispatch.
Culture.
So, Yvette, what story did you bring to me today?
So today we published an article on keto called "The Keto Diet is a Recipe for Disaster." But the article didn't focus to tell you that this diet didn't work for weight loss. It does, or it can. This article didn't strive to tell you don't ever do keto no matter what your circumstances. I don't know what you've tried. I don't know what works for you. But the point is there are a lot of myths about keto, and we really did want to try to wade through them, see what was true, see what was false. And people are going to be surprised at some of the things that that the diet really, like, it doesn't work the way people generally think it does. And it was developed as a treatment for epilepsy about 100 years ago.
I'm ready to dig right into this because, like,
yeah,
for a minute, I was doing keto.
We can't be friends anymore. No.
Yeah, about a year ago, I tried it, and I immediately hated it.
I can see why. It does not look like, and I mean, I get it. Some people, it's the only thing they've ever found that allows them to balance their diet to a healthy level of calories. But you know what? Most people, if they learn a little bit more about diet science, can manage to balance out their diet and feel like they're full enough, without cutting out oranges,
Right. So what's the main issue here with the ketogenic diet?
First, I want to go back a little and talk about how it was developed. About 100 years ago, we really didn't have regular, steadily available treatments for things like epilepsy or diabetes. And out of research labs that were both trying to figure out how to manage this before we had, readily available drugs or in the case of diabetes, insulin. And eventually, they first found that fasting had some interesting metabolic effects that it produced, either both fasting and, some of the scientists found that exercising on their way to work would raise the amount of endogenous ketones in their urine. So they also saw that in fasting. So, when they also witnessed that people with epilepsy could reduce their seizures or eliminate them altogether with a couple of days of fasting. So it was like, all right, fasting seems to work. And they would keep people with diabetes on a very low calorie diet, restricted to something like 800 to 900 calories a day. And then they tried patients with diabetes on the ketogenic diet, and it worked marginally better than nothing. But when the patients that were on it, when they discovered insulin, they found that insulin worked much better, allowed patients to get to a healthy weight, allowed them to eat more. Like, this was a huge breakthrough. But the ketogenic diet that they tried for it did still seem to have some interesting metabolic effects. And for whatever reason, it manipulates the body into having those same effects as starvation, those same metabolic effects where you switch over to burning fat and you produce ketones. And here's the thing, we don't know what exactly in this diet, what the mechanism is that reduces seizures. And I have not seen anything that suggests what the exact mechanism is that can control seizures. But 100 years ago, when we had no anti-epileptics or no anti-convulsants available, this was a breakthrough. Parents finally, saw their children with epilepsy able to manage it. Like, life became manageable, and they still use the ketogenic diet for epilepsy management for drug resistant cases today. But it's really not preferred by most people who can tolerate the drugs because it's just such a restrictive way to eat. Like, in a true keto diet, you're restricted to 15 grams of carbs per day. Your protein, it's about 1 gram per kilogram of body weight, and the rest of your calories are filled up with fat. So you're eating such a huge proportion of your diet from fat that it limits the other things you can eat. So those are some of the those are some of the basics, how it got started, how people, first were told this is a thing. And it really was a medical treatment for epilepsy, not a treatment for weight control.
When did the transition happen?
So there were a couple different stages to this. One was Dr. Atkins, and he first came out in about the 70s. And I think it was 1972 when he first published Dr. Atkins' Diet Revolution. And that book, it was kind of before his time / launched at an era we were right in the middle of the low fat, the very kind of low fat craze. And that some people have tried to pin that on Ansel Keys. He was a researcher, a diet researcher, for the most part. And he had given some of the guidelines that led us towards having a lower fat or a lower saturated fat diet overall. And that was, that was mainly from epidemiological studies. Like at the time, we didn't quite know how complicated the relationship was between cholesterol, your body's cholesterol level and dietary cholesterol. We weren't sure what the link was, but we did seem to see a trend that people who ate more saturated fat were more prone to heart attack. So that was, the big thing was like, that was the 50s and 60s. It was the Mad Men era. Like that view of people just, living to 55 and dropping dead of a heart attack. That was that era. So there was this huge push to fight off, heart attacks, which, noble thing to do. Ansel Keys didn't get everything correct, but, it wasn't a bad starting place to say, limit your saturated fats, because that's still the position of the American Heart Association, is to keep your saturated fats relatively low. And then, people started just buying low fat products, thinking it would control their weight and control their health. But overall, people were not cutting calories. If you look at records showing, purchasing trends and based on overall sales of different products that the USDA has tracked, it's shown that over that era, we tried to cut fat, we didn't do it very successfully, and the punchline is we didn't cut overall calories. So people kept on gaining weight, even though they're like, but I'm fat free. There's my fridge is just fat free yogurt and sadness. Now why am I gaining weight? I'm sorry. Friends don't let friends eat low fat yogurt. I tell people do what works for them, but I'm also like, no, don't take the fat out. It's going to taste horrible.
There was a period in my life where I remember
Snackwell's cookies.
Yes, the very thin Snackwell cookies. Oh. I thought because they were low fat, I could eat all of them.
Somewhere deep down, I knew that I couldn't eat the whole box, but you never felt, I get it. Like the only macronutrient that really makes you feel satisfied, is protein. That's the one that fills you up much, disproportionately higher than the amount of calories from protein you're taking in. But still having something that tastes like a cardboard cake, with no fat in it whatsoever. Like I get it that that's not exactly going to fill you up, but it's just, you feel like you've eaten emptiness. It's so sad. And it's nobody ate just one of those cookies. Or at least nobody I knew did, because you'd be like, it's low fat, I can have seven. Like that was a prevailing thought at the time, or at least it was the mindset. And so, eventually this kind of primed Dr. Atkins' diet for a comeback, and that he re-released or he did a new edition of the book of Dr. Atkins' Diet Revolution. And it was now called Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution. Ah, it's new. So that means it's better. So anyways, so he releases it in 1992. It's still kind of a sleeper. 1997, he re-releases it, and it jumps to the top of the bestseller charts and stays there for years. And it was like suddenly everybody just got tired of low fat diets and said, this isn't working, and tried low carb. And at one point, about 10% of the country was on a low carb diet. And in the early 2000s, we saw this shift where once upon a time, if someone was trying to lose weight or, just trying to look out for their health, they would cut fat. Or they would just kind of be watching their overall fat intake. Then In somewhere in the early 2000s, about 2003 to 2005, we saw a major shift in consumer behavior, and it was noted by, you know, by an exec at one of these companies that makes everything delicious on the planet, that he, you know, the quotes in the article, but that, you know, one year it went from, you know, maybe 10-11% of people being concerned with their carbs, and then it jumped to 40% of people who weren't even dieting trying to watch their carbs. So it was this huge shift. And now, like, I'm in a handful of workout forums and whatnot, and I see this quote all the time, like constantly now, that people are like, it's just been ingrained into my head that carbohydrates are bad. I guess it's just the pervasive the prevailing knowledge now. And I'm like, y'all don't remember the 90s, do you? Like, this is new pervasive thought.
Keto just feels like just a rebranding of Atkins,
right? Oh, yeah,
right?
Exactly. And I mean, keto, like I said, started off for epilepsy control. And then, like, there are a handful of reasons why I think this showed up again, because some of this is stuff that I haven't researched into as much. So I don't want to speak too out of turn, but it does seem that, you know, part of the reason why this has gained some popularity, and this goes back to, you know, every woo cures every disease or every bullshit cures every disease. There are parents in the autism community who, like, there's, every so often you have, or with some level of frequency, you have children who both have epilepsy and autism. And I think there's a pervasive thought in the epilepsy or in that community that once you can treat the epilepsy with this diet, and so their children is advancing cognitively, so it's also treating the autism. And that does not at this point seem to be accurate. What happens with this diet, especially in a child with epilepsy, is that their cognition is able to keep growing because they're not constantly having seizures. So it can appear that they're advancing, that, you know, that everything they're doing to, you know, help the child grow intellectually is has suddenly worked better because of keto. But really, it's because the seizures are under control, and so people have, you know, bought into this line that it can improve cognition. It's like, no, it really, there is yet to be any firm proof of that at this point. And the main people it does improve cognition in are people who deal with tons of seizures a day. So it's been interesting seeing how the rumors from that have floated. Like, and I mean, there, I'm not sure why the rebranding this time is keto as opposed to Atkins. Like, it didn't seem to be a huge switch. Like, there's basically a small switch in fat to protein ratio, but this is just another way to tell people carbs are bad, and no macronutrients is bad if you don't have an allergy or a sensitivity, or if you can handle it in your diet. But there's presenting this as though this is this form of calorie is the only one you have to avoid, or is the only thing you have to do to maintain good health, is really kind of a problem.
So what does work?
Well, I mean, in terms of dieting itself, anything that controls your overall caloric load or anything that induces a caloric deficit will cause weight loss. And that's part of the reason why these diets, why Atkins and keto, why they work, is because they eliminate a lot of foods that people eat too much of. We think of the diet and go, oh no, they're cutting, you know, I can't have fruit anymore. This is the, you know, how am I going to, you know, it's weird to me that there's a diet that says fruit is bad for you. But the other things it cuts out, all the processed foods, all the candy, when you cut out that many sources of calories, even though you might think you're eating more calories because you're getting more calories from fat, you've eliminated like huge sources of things that are really easy to binge on. So you're getting more calories from fat, but if the diet's working, it tends to be because you're having fewer overall calories. And one other thing with Atkins/keto, you do lose a little more weight at first, but it is 100% all water weight. So any extra weight loss at first, like, you're going to lose a few pounds of fat each week, like, if you're depending on your caloric deficit, But man, those first few weeks when suddenly the scale just drops down, it's water weight because of how glycogen binds with water in the body. So we make ourselves a little silly when we're trying to find things to lose weight. And this seems like such a miracle the first few weeks with the water weight, but it's not sustainable weight loss. Most studies have shown that people who do this diet will gain back all or most of the weight within a year. Saying that keto and Atkins people tend to gain back the weight within a year, that's not any sort of a thing against keto or Atkins. That's just reality with diets, is that they're hard, and finding something that works for you long-term and sustainably is the hardest part of it.
I mean, so it sounds like the key is just eat less calories, and that seems very hard to brand.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I joke that I'll never write a diet book because I'm that asshole who would just, you know, independently publish it, put a bunch of words or a bunch of empty pages in there and just have two words, eat less, exercise more. And that is a totally dickish thing to do, I know. But it's, you know, there aren't a ton of practical diet books out there that teach you, you know, what the, you know, there are some in the science-based community. People have tried to educate their audience on how this works. But those the books that say, here's how calories work, here are the foods that make it easier to eat less. You should, you know, load up on some extra protein because it, you know, because it satiates you more. Eat veggies because they're calorie, they're not calorically dense and they have a lot of nutrients. Like these foods aren't magic. It's just that they do make it easier to maintain a balanced diet and get everything healthy and that you need while still, you know, giving you some room to have ice cream once in a while.
That was contributing writer at The Outline, Yvette Donchermont. You should definitely read the full piece, The Keto Diet is a Recipe for Disaster, at theoutline.com. Thanks, Yvette.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm over at scibabe.com, at facebook.com/scibabe for all of the memes that I like to share on science and silliness on the internet. And I'm at Twitter and Instagram at the scibabe.
And you have a new podcast coming out soon, right?
I do. We just put out the first few episodes today. It's called Two Girls, One Mic. It's the podcast that reviews the plot holes and other holes in pornography. We have the first two episodes out. The first one discussed the classic hit, Deep Throat. The second one, we interviewed the queen of VR porn, Ella Darling, and talked about everything from library science to teledildonic technology to the cinematography challenges of shooting VR porn. We're trying to get a lot of fun stuff in there beyond just there are penises in this movie. Like we're trying to be the podcast about porn that talks about library science.
The Outline World Dispatch is produced and hosted by me, James C. Green. Our music is courtesy of APM, and our theme is by the fantastic John Lagomarsino. I'm James C. Green.
It's okay. I've seen Neil deGrasse Tyson do that with an opening monologue for a show once. Just three false starts, and eventually, here is the wonderful melodious one from Neil that we expect.
I say, I've been doing this for a decade, and it's still. All right.
There's happens to everyone.
Yeah. Hey, it's James. If you're listening this far, you've definitely been one of the real big fans here at The Dispatch. And I just wanted to leave you this little message. So this episode will be my last dispatch. I've decided to step down from my role at The Outline and go on to some new adventures. So I really appreciate y'all just like sharing the show and really enjoying this fun little project that we've had. Still keep your subscription open on the feed. There's still going to be new episodes coming soon with a brand new host. All right. Thanks again. See you soon.